It's time for overtime.
Now that's a tourist attraction.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Turns, shoots, scores! There he is!
From coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
We've made it to another Monday edition of Overtime. Welcome into the show. We are ready to go as we make our way into the college football season officially this week. Week zero is this weekend. Reserve your spot on your couch coming up on Saturday. We got 5 ball games coming your way, and it all starts with a big one. Farmageddon between two ag-based programs here in our neck of the woods, but they're playing over in Dublin, Ireland to get the season going. It's Iowa State and Kansas State, 11 o'clock on ESPN on Saturday, August 23rd. That is the headline game of week zero of the college football season. We're talking all things college football in hour number one. USF Cougar play-by-play broadcaster Tom Frederick will join us, set to preview that season and what is in store for Coach Glow and the USF Cougars this year. They got several commitments rolling in for the future of the program. Camp is winding down and the season right around the corner. A week from Thursday will be the opener for USF. They're going to be out in Spearfish matching up with Black Hills State. That will get going before too long, and that game a 7 o'clock kick time Thursday, August 28th. The preview with Tom Frederick, play-by-play broadcaster for the USF Cougar football program, will join us coming up in about 20 minutes. In about 30 minutes on this day in sports history, and at the end of hour number one, college football officially here because we're starting to get some conclusions with some quarterback battles. We do not know about the big one yet, so don't tell me that you're not surprised just yet, but Ohio State has not named a starter between Lincoln Kienholz and Julian Sayin. That is the two-horse race there in Columbus for the defending champion Ohio State Buckeyes. But we do have starting quarterback announcements elsewhere, and a very notable injury for Kalen DeBoer's Alabama Crimson Tide ahead of their season opener. That and more coming up at the end of hour number one, and we will look at some week zero and week one spreads for the college football season. Hour two, headlines and highlights around the corner, latest from the NFL, and a season preview for a team that is suddenly a gigantic mystery, the LA Rams. 2 weeks ago, you felt pretty good about this season. Last week, you said, oh, I don't know what's going on. And now, we really don't know what's going on with Matthew Stafford. Could he retire? Could he miss the season? Could he miss a portion of the year? Could he just play it all the way through with that back issue going on right now? Get you the latest on Matthew Stafford and a full-fledged preview of the LA Rams season in hour number two. Major League Baseball's chase is on, odds and storylines, and an update on Cal Raleigh's pursuit of some further greatness this year. And we round out the show with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's dive into Major League Baseball finals from yesterday. Atlanta squeaks by Cleveland 5-4 in Cleveland with the latest win for the Braves. Milwaukee does lose finally in 10 innings to Cincinnati 3-2 on the road. Kansas City over the White Sox 6-2, and the Minnesota Twins, a big time moment for Brooks Lee and a big win over Detroit yesterday.
Breaking ball to Brooks, and he hits it high in the air. Deep right field. Does it have the distance? It does! The first grand slam of the year for the Minnesota Twins. And Brooks Lee, who struck out with the bags full last night, belts one to right and blows the lid off of this one.
That's the first career grand slam for Brooks Lee, part of an 8-1 effort for Minnesota. They moved their record to 58-66. Corey Koski was inducted into the Minnesota Twins Hall of Fame. Does that inspire Byron Buxton? Is that in his plans and his goals to end up there as well?
I ain't said I'm thinking about it, but that's a dream. You know, it's something that when this is all said and done, to be able to put your name in the record books here is, for me, it'd be everything. You know, that's like a cherry on top of just being able to stay here for the rest of my career. You know, that's kind of undescribable at the moment. I'm not in it, but kind of give me goosebumps to think about it. And, you know, it's exciting. You see the guy, like you said, it's a bunch of guys that I know that's in it, and it's exciting. I want to be a part of that, too. So it's something to work for.
Byron Buxton, a huge bright spot this year for Minnesota. Lastly on the Twins for now, manager Rocco Baldelli postgame following the 8-1 win over the rival Tigers.
Great team day out there. Great win. On Koski Day, like, it's no, these are the kinds of days that are special. You get a lot of former Twins greats in the house, and people are excited, and to go out there and have such a good day where everyone's contributing and doing, you know, not just doing something, doing big, doing all kinds of stuff. And Thomas was just sitting here talking to you guys. Another gutsy performance by him. Did a heck of a job. The big inning, you know, Brooks hitting the grand slam, obviously is probably it's the play of the day. It's the day that separates the game for us and really pushes us towards a win.
Nice ending to an otherwise rough weekend for Minnesota. They dropped 3 out of 4 against Detroit, losing 4-3, 7-0, 8-5, and then yesterday an 8-1 win for Minnesota. Other finals, Yankees over St. Louis 8-4, Cubbies get a win over Pittsburgh 4-3, and the Rockies are stacking a few of them here. They're approaching that 41 win number. The reason that's important is you just want to avoid the ineptitude of the White Sox last year. Rockies are now just 6 wins away from tying last year's putrid White Sox record with 41 wins. Colorado with a 6-5 win over Arizona yesterday moves their record to 35-89. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Brewers and Cubs will play 2 from Wrigley, 1:20 and 7:05 start times. Both of those games can be seen on the Major League Baseball Network. Other matchups in tow, Astros at Tigers, Cardinals at Marlins, White Sox at Braves, Royals home to the Rangers, Dodgers visiting the Rockies, and the Diamondbacks playing host to Cleveland. Rewinding the NFL weekend, back on Friday, Kansas City gets walloped by Seattle, 33-16. Saturday, Miami over Detroit, 24-17. Green Bay comes from behind after a very ugly start to the football game for the Packers. All sorts of miscues. A butt-chewing for a rookie offensive lineman in Green Bay. But it's all for the greater good because Green Bay came back and won the ball game against Indy 23-19. Amar Johnson did get another touchdown run. 7 carries, 22 yards and a score. Packers are 1-1. Other final, New England beats Minnesota in Minneapolis 20-12. And Arizona loses to Denver 27-7. Troy Franklin, a coming out party for the young wide receiver out of Oregon. Franklin, 4 catches, 67 yards and 2 touchdowns for the Broncos. And then yesterday, a game that a lot of people were looking forward to watching turned out to not be much of a game at all. The Bears all over the Bills doesn't mean much, but an inspiring performance for Caleb Williams, who according to his coach has had an up and down camp this offseason.
Anytime you're a young player, there's usually a couple steps forward and one step back, and that's really been the story of his training camp, and he and I have been really open and honest about that as we've gone through, and he's had some really good practices, and he's had a couple where it's like, that's not good enough, bud. So I thought really the 3 days of practice we had this week and this game were the most he stacked up good days in a row right now. So the challenge is going to be to keep pushing in that direction.
Final stat line for Caleb Williams, 6 of 10 passing, 107 yards and a touchdown to Olamide Zaccheaus, who got the football on a strike from Williams. Made a couple of people miss and danced his way into the end zone. Here's Mike Tannenbaum, former NFL general manager, on Caleb's performance last night.
I thought he looked confident. He knew where to go with the ball. I thought he was quick-minded, quick-footed, accurate. You know, if he plays as well as he did last night, I think this division is fascinating.
And this applies to a lot of quarterbacks out there, but it feels like Caleb Williams at this stage in his career is a structure guy and a rhythm guy. You want to be in rhythm, get the ball out on that first read, and that's what Caleb did yesterday to his credit. 6 of 10, 107 yards and a score. Chris Canty likes what he sees in Chicago.
This is a team that we can now start to factor into the mix of dark horse playoff contenders. Remember, before the preseason started, I had the Chicago Bears as a playoff team. I didn't see anything over the first 2 weeks, the first 2 preseason games, to dissuade me of that opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that was based on Caleb Williams having to show and prove because he's out of excuses. And credit to the kid, he showed and he proved last night that this is not going to be too big for him. Now it's just a matter of him continuing to get better, continue to affirm his understanding of Ben Johnson's offense, and develop in a sin.
I know that it's the job of media folks to overreact to things like this, but every single year we talk about it, whether it's around the water cooler or here on the air with you about the preseason, doesn't mean a thing. You want your team to come out and look good, individual players play well, be good in good spots, and certainly make plays. But why are we talking any different about the Bears today than we did yesterday? I mean, Caleb looked okay. That was great. But now we're going to go ahead and say they're a dark horse playoff team because they blew out the Bills in a meaningless preseason game in which the Bills didn't play anybody. I'm just not ready to change my opinion on a team based on what I'm seeing in the preseason. Individual players, sure. Caleb Williams deserves some accolades, some praise for how he looked yesterday. That's fine. But altering your approach to a team based on what you see in the preseason, which we've seen all over the gamut today of national media, social media, about praise for the Bears, what's wrong with the Buffalo Bills, you lose me there with the preseason football overreaction. Now, lastly here from the NFL, your regular season opener will be the Cowboys and the Eagles on September 4th. Tonight, we do have one game to round out week 2 of the preseason. Bengals at Commanders, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Michelle Smallman talking a little bit further about the former. That's the Dallas Cowboys owner, general manager, ringleader extraordinaire, Jerry Jones, refusing to step out of the spotlight.
If you knew that your presence or your involvement in a certain way in a business was prohibited to everyone else, including yourself, reaching the highest level, and you thought the answer was, maybe I need to chill out on that. Maybe I need to take a step back. 9 times out of 10, that person is like, yes, let me remove myself in this way from this equation because I want what's best for everybody. Jerry won't do that. He can't do that. He absolutely refuses to take the spotlight off of himself. And as long as he continues down that route, he's going to win at the bank, but he's not going to win on the field.
Cowboys and Eagles will get it going on Thursday, September 4th for the regular season opener. Packers home to the Lions, Vikings visiting the Bears for a opening edition of Monday Night Football. Again, that's a Monday, September the 8th. NASCAR race over the weekend. Austin Dillon won at Richmond, setting up the final race of the season before the Cup playoffs get going. The race is at Daytona Sunday, 6:30 on NBC. And a come-from-behind victory for Scotty Scheffler. Several magic moments to win the BMW Championship at 15-under. Ran down Robert McIntyre. McIntyre still finished second at 13-under. And next up, the Tour Championship from Atlanta running Thursday through Sunday. WNBA basketball, Sophie Cunningham exits with an injury. Caitlin Clark still not back, but Indiana still stacking wins. They win in overtime against Connecticut 99-93 yesterday. Fever are 19-16. And elsewhere, Las Vegas all over Dallas 106-87. No action tonight, but Tuesday there's 3 games concerning area teams. Lynx at the Liberty, 6 o'clock on NBA TV. Dream at the Aces. Yes, we're lumping Coach Hammond and the Aces in as an area team. Just like Coach Nate Tibbetts and the Mercury will be in a moment. 9 o'clock, Dream at Aces tomorrow night. Mercury at the Valkyries, 9 o'clock as well. College football week 0 is upon us. Saturday, we'll see 5 different ball games. Iowa State at Kansas State, 11 o'clock. Idaho State at UNLV, a 3 o'clock go time. Fresno State at Kansas, 5:30. Sam Houston at Western Kentucky, 6 o'clock. And Stanford visiting Hawaii, 6:30 on CBS. Now, over the weekend, Friday, we got the news. We had all weekend to talk about it and discuss it, form our opinions on it. And here's Adam Rittenberg, college football analyst with ESPN, talking about the Big Ten's ridiculous notion. Before we go there, though, how about Michigan's punishment? We'll start there with Rittenberg talking about the Wolverines penalty, which is mostly financial and mostly a slap on the wrist.
We're just at a different time, and I understand the frustration because you're dealing with a competitive integrity issue. You're not dealing with impermissible benefits or some of the things that are really a relic of the past. But this is where we are in college sports right now. And, you know, the financial penalties will hurt, but there's no bowl ban. There's nothing that really impacts this current team as they begin their season in a couple of weeks. And I can understand the frustration of other fan bases, especially those who have been hit with bowl bans in the past.
And again, certainly a lot of programs impacted by this. Any team that Michigan faced, also Michigan scouting a zillion different opponents in advance. Would I have liked to seen them get a year bowl ban? Sure. Or maybe some sort of vacated win or something that actually is a bigger admission of guilt. And hey, don't do this. Because I was talking with friends about this over the weekend, and nobody's going to do this. But what kind of message does this send two programs. Michigan is a championship caliber program. I'm not calling them a middling Power Four school, but if you're a team in the Big Ten that has not won anything recently, let's talk about Illinois or Purdue, or in the Big 12, let's throw in Kansas or a school like that. You want to dissuade and discourage programs and teams from doing this. And gosh, can you believe the penalty Michigan got for cheating? I'm glad we don't do that. Not saying this is going to encourage it, but what kind of message does this send when Michigan clearly broke the rules and clearly destroyed some evidence, allegedly, in the process of this investigation, pretended not to know anything about it, then poo-pooed the seriousness of it, all that in conjunction. And then after this all, they still retain the national title. They still retain that allure as a championship caliber program moving forward. They get all this stuff. And then Sharon Moore going to miss three total games. They're going to be fined roughly $30 million, which in today's world of college athletics, an absolute drop in the bucket, and no big admission of guilt here. So yeah, if you're Illinois, you're Kansas, those middling group of four or power four programs that haven't won anything in a while, would you trade $30 million in a ding of reputation for a national title? I bet you would. Not a great message from the NCAA, but they are not good at their job. Now, speaking of not being good at their job, how about the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, the discussion, because this is absolutely ludicrous. We go from no playoff to a 14 playoff to a 12-team playoff. Now we're thinking about 16, and now we're thinking about 24 or 28 teams, according to the Big Ten's proposal over the weekend. Here's more from Rittenberg.
Someone has to come up with something, and as one Big Ten athletic director told me, the SEC is not coming up with anything. So we're trying to push the discussion forward. Maybe it won't have enough public support, but we're trying to throw out ideas out there, even though a lot of people are saying this one is a little bit too out there.
24 to 28 teams in the postseason. I'm just going to ask honestly here, based on the discussions we've had right now about a 16-team playoff and a 5-5-1 model or whatever the heck that means. The Big Ten gets five teams in a 16-team playoff guaranteed. SEC, same deal. Rest of you, you better just pony up and grab a seat while you can or where you can in the process. But with a 24-team playoff or a 28-team playoff, honest question, how many programs from the Big Ten and the SEC get in? And why do we even have a regular season in that case? If you're going to let eight Big Ten schools or 10 Big Ten schools into the College Football Playoff, I feel like we got to shorten up the regular season, emphasize its value, and we're going to be playing football till February or March, sometime pretty soon, if these weird proposals keep trickling in from the world of college football. That's the latest there for now. Week one schedule around the corner for our area schools. USF at Black Hills State, Thursday, August 28th at 7. Same time as Buffalo visiting Minnesota. Nebraska against Cincinnati in Arrowhead Stadium will be 8 o'clock that night on ESPN. And Saturday the 30th, Missouri Western at Augustana, USD at Iowa State, Iowa home to Albany, and Sac State visiting South Dakota State. That's the nightcap among our area schools, 6 o'clock on Saturday, August 30th. And lastly here on the scorecard, Little League World Series action tonight. Sioux Falls Little League will play 6 o'clock on ESPN. The opponent tonight is Fairfield, Connecticut. Root on Sioux Falls Little League to victory. Again, 6 o'clock start time tonight on ESPN. Really quickly here, toe dip into your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. Tragedy within the Summit League and tragedy for Omaha and North Dakota men's basketball. Omaha forward Deng Mayar, who transferred from UND this offseason, passed away over the weekend in an apparent drowning incident. School announced on Sunday he was just 22 years old. According to news reports, Mayar was with a friend at the Black Ridge Reservoir in Harriman, Utah, when they began to struggle in the water. And according to the local TV station in Salt Lake City, Mayar's friend reached the shore, but went back into the water to assist his friend, and Mayar continued to struggle and went underwater, did not reemerge. Rest in peace, 22 years old, absolutely tragic. More on the incident, more details on that unfortunate news surrounding the Summit League, Omaha Maverick men's basketball, North Dakota Fighting Hawk basketball as well. Really tough stuff and tragic situation over the weekend down in Omaha, out in Utah with that particular incident. That's the latest in your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. Tough news to pass along from the world of men's basketball in our neck of the woods. We're going to take our first break, come back talking USF Cougar football right around the corner. They'll get a earlier start than most, a Thursday night game next week in Spearfish against Black Hills State. We'll preview the ball game. preview the season, the names to know, and what defines success this year for the USF Cougars on the gridiron. That's coming up next. USF play-by-play broadcaster Tom Frederick joins us after this on this Monday edition of Overtime.
Stream us online, stream us on the app. Streaming now, Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you. We're just getting going on this Monday, August 18th edition of Overtime. Just about ready to get going with the USF Cougar football season at Black Hills State coming up a week from Thursday. Yellow Jackets the opponent on Thursday night, a 7 o'clock start time from Spearfish. Here to help preview the season and preview that game and more, USF Cougar play-by-play broadcaster Tom Frederick joins us now on the ESPN hotline. Tom, welcome back into the show. How you doing?
I'm good, Bert. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it a lot. I'm
very excited to talk to you, get a preview of the season ahead and a hopeful season. Last year, 8-3 and a big turnaround in year two under Coach Glow. How has the offseason been treating you? And give me some offseason observations around the Cougar program here in Sioux Falls.
Well, I was detained in the Pacific Northwest for early August. I got married on August 1st, but I got back just last weekend, dove in with both feet. I've been out there about four or five times, and I've been, let's just say, cautiously optimistic of what I've seen from this year's USF football team that was picked to finish near the top of the NSIC in the preseason coaches poll. I mean, you got to be really enthused about a team, Bert, that returns a standout quarterback, a dual threat quarterback, someone who can harm you with his feet as well as his arm. That's senior Camden Dean. Dean's got a full complement of wide receivers coming back, the top three from a year ago, led by Hank Brown Jr., Adonis Hutchinson, and Christian Janis. I'm really enthused about a young running back they have. Last year, as a redshirt freshman, he got in tail end of the year at a 100-yard game against Southwest Minnesota State. His name is Carlson Tan. He goes by Bubba, and he's going to be a good one. The offensive line, they've got everybody back who's a starter. Everybody at all five positions has started at least one game in their NSIC career, so I think they're going to be pretty strong up front. Defensively, I really like the D-line. They're about 10 deep up there. Linebackers led by Andy Henson in the middle. This guy is a load. He's a sophomore from West Branch, Iowa. He was an all-conference player a year ago, first team in the NSIC, 6'2", 235, and he gets to the football and makes the ball carriers pay. I'm a little bit leery about their secondary. They've got some strength in Garrett Hoffman, a junior, one of the team captains at safety. Cade Morse, pretty good at safety. Corners are going to be untested. But if they can get some pressure up front, it'll alleviate the concern maybe in the secondary a bit. So that's my quick capsulization there of what the Cougars look like here in fall camp.
We're 10 days away from the opener for USF Cougar football. For the look at the schedule and the personalities on that roster, USFCougars.com. We're talking with Cougar play-by-play broadcaster Tom Frederick here on this Monday, August 18th edition of Overtime. Tom, in your purview, that bird's eye view that you get at Bob Young Field and otherwise, what was the big difference between 2023 and 2024 for the program? The obvious answer is another year under the program and the coaching staff under Coach Glow and the youth turning into experience. But is there something else that really changed last year that you took note of that made such a big difference?
I think they have bought into Coach Glow's philosophy and his enthusiasm. I mean, I've been around this program for over a quarter century now, had some great coaches at USF through the years, Bob Young, Kalen DeBoer, to name just two. But the enthusiasm under Coach Glow is just remarkable. And the guys, they're reacting to him. They're out there. He may be critical at times. He may get on their rear ends at times, but he only wants them to get better. And I think they realize that. And he's a coach that I would like to play for if I was doing it all over again some 50 years ago.
Quarterback Camden Dean going to be back. You mentioned the dual threat nature of Dean. Pretty impressive completion percentage. You talk about young quarterbacks. That's something that sometimes lacks. But he's completed 64% of his passes back-to-back years, 23 touchdowns through the air, 8 on the ground. Give me another nugget or two on Cam Dean, the player, the person, something that stands out as he gears up for what could be a very special season.
Cam Dean is a guy who is a leader. The team follows his directives. The last two years he was the starter. He beat out a guy who had thrown for more than 4,000 yards in his career, Adam Mullen, who was a team captain. And Cam Dean followed Adam Mullen's leadership, and now he's picked up the mantle. And I believe the offense is bought into what Cam can bring to the line of scrimmage, and they love playing for this guy because he's a great thrower, as you mentioned, mid-60s percentage completions. And with his feet, he can get out of trouble. And he's a very valuable part of this offense. Now, if he goes down, they've got some good backups behind him. Bennett Brick, a sophomore from Indianola, Iowa, and a local young man, Tate Schaefer, redshirt freshman from Lincoln High School. Wouldn't be surprised to see both of those guys play should an unforeseen circumstance happen and Cam Dean get hurt.
Big season ahead for USF Cougar football. Again, it begins a week from Thursday night out in Spearfish at Black Hills State. Yellow Jackets, the opponent. Tom, it's right on that line you just gave us a minute ago about your time as play-by-play broadcaster. I got to ask, last time they were in Spearfish was October 16th of 1999. Were you on board for that one? And give me a memory or two from that game if you can dig that deep.
Oh, yeah, I was there, and special teams played a big part. Both teams missed kicks. Cougars did win it by one when young Matt Kuiper was able to get the winning points up on the board, and then the Cougars blocked a field goal late in that one. It was so long ago, Bert, I remember driving home after the game listening to a CD of Shania Twain, who was popular at the time. It's been that long. Now, they did play more recently. In the transition year of 2011, both teams were converting from NAIA to NCAA Division II, and they played again at Bob Young Field. Sioux Falls won that one 44-20. So 14 years ago is the most recent get-together among these two rivals who played annually for years and years in the old South Dakota Intercollegiate Conference back in the 80s and 90s.
And all told, really great historical dive there. You can dive a little bit deep yourself at usfcougars.com. They've played a total of 33 times, 12 wins for USF, including all of the last 7 games. When it comes to Black Hills State, I'm sure, knowing you, Tom, you're very diligent, prepared, ready to go. Give me a nugget or two on the Yellow Jackets here as we prep to see that program. What stands out and what could be a feisty team in the opener?
It's a good test here. The Cougars, the last 2 years, have been able to play out of the Northern Sun. First time since they joined the league. I mean, it was a silo scheduling situation until 2023 when they went to Pitt State, and last year they opened at St. Thomas. So this would be a good test. NSIC versus the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference. The RMAC, dominated in the past by Colorado Mines. They played for the national championship. The Yellow Jackets in the middle of the pack for the RMAC. They're coming off 3 straight winning years. The last 2, they went 6-5. You got a standout quarterback and Luke Doobie. It'll be a good test for the Cougars, but I, Bert, in 27 years, have seen one losing season here. I think they've lost 50 games in my 26 seasons. That's not many. I'm always optimistic, and I always think that the Cougars going into a contest, even that game at Pitt State where they really had no chance at winning, I'm really optimistic most times when the ball is kicked off. And August 28th will be no different. I think Sioux Falls goes into Spearfish and comes out of there with a second consecutive season-opening road victory. Last year at St. Thomas, this year in Spearfish.
Home opener will be the week following and a Saturday, September 6th opener against Northern State and several other big home games on the schedule. You can view that at usfcougars.com. Tom Frederick, our guest, USF Cougar play-by-play broadcaster. Tom, before we cut you loose, just an opportunity to plug away for the broadcast. Give us your synopsis of how long the pregame show will be, postgame, any other special features this year, and how to find the broadcast of USF Cougar football.
I appreciate that, Bert. We'll be on KWSN, AM 1230, FM 98.1 again this year. Pre-games will be 30 minutes before kickoff. Home games, Bert will have Chad Berger on the sidelines working it for us. Tim Hyatt will be joining me on the booth, and Tim and I will be on the road for all the contests this year. Cougars with 5 home games, 6 road games in 2025.
And certainly eye on the playoffs, eye on the prize, and more. 8-3 last year for USF Cougar football. More information, tickets, schedule, roster, personalities, usfcougars.com. That's broadcaster Tom Frederick. Tom, always a pleasure, my friend. Have a great season. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Bert, I appreciate the invitation, and thank you very much, and sure looking forward to the campaign ahead.
Hey, we can't wait either. 10 days away, USF Cougar football. It's a 7 o'clock start time out there in Spearfish. You can grab that broadcast and more. Tom Frederick, always a great job. USF Cougars underway a little bit earlier than most D2 programs this year. Thursday of next week in Spearfish against Black Hills State. We'll take the break. It's Monday, which means we're going to dive into some sports history here in just a moment. On this day in sports history, a lot to sift through on this August 18th as we look back before we look forward on the show. College football primer to end hour number one around the corner in hour two. Latest from the NFL and a season preview for the potentially Matthew Stafford-less Los Angeles Rams. We'll dive into that in hour two. Keep it here. It's Monday. It's overtime right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.
Don't miss a moment of pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Monday, August 18th edition of Overtime. Great conversation moments ago as we continue to get you primed, ready, and well-read in advance of the college football season. We talked with John Thayer, Tyler Merriam last week. This week, just wrapped up a conversation with USF Sioux Falls Cougar football play-by-play broadcaster Tom Frederick. Augie play-by-play broadcaster Jeff Filling will join us later this week as well, previewing the big season ahead for our area football programs. All 4 of them have some playoff and realistic playoff aspirations in 2025. Let's look back now before we can go back to looking forward to the college football season, back to on this day in sports history on a Monday.
History repeats itself.
Down goes Frazier!
Well, sometimes.
What are they going to roll? Did he caught it? Touchdown! He did what?
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
My, oh my!
And some that live forever.
Russell looks, throws inside. Oh my God, he picked off!
Oh, he broke his ankles!
Snap good, spot down. Walsh's kick is up, and it is no good! He missed it! Are you kidding me?
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
Absolutely love Mondays on the show. Absolutely love this segment for this reason. We start back in 1914, and certain events just pique my interest. 1914 on this day, Swiss track and road bicycle racer Oscar Egg, as in egg the food, set a new hour-long world record of 44.247 kilometers, translates nearly to 27 miles at the outdoor Velodrome Buffalo in Paris. The record stood until 1933, nearly 20 years. Here's a little bit more about one Oscar Egg, passed away in Nice, France in 1961. Between 1907 and 1914, Egg and Marcel Berthet improved the hour record. How long can you go in terms of distance in an hour on a bicycle six times between the two gentlemen? Egg's 1914 mark of 44.247 kilometers, that is 27 and a half miles, covered in 1 hour, which means on average you're going, if the math checks out, 27 and a half miles per hour. Impressive stuff there for Oscar Egg on this day in 1914. That record stood for nearly 20 years. 1915, just 1 year later, the Braves field opened in Boston to see the Braves beat St. Louis 3-1 on this day in 1915, some 110 years ago. 1922, on this day in sports history, PGA Championship men's golf at Oakmont Country Club, 20-year-old U.S. Open champion Gene Sarazen defeated Emmett French 4-3, 4-2-3, in the final. 1943, on this day in sports history, Giants future baseball Hall of Fame pitcher Carl Hubble won his 253rd and final game as New York beat the Pirates 3-2 at the Polo Grounds in 1943. Fast forward 30 years to 1973, Hammer and Hank was going at it. 1973 for Hank Aaron, his record of 1,378 extra base hits surpassed Stan Musial's record on this day in 73. 1982 was the longest baseball game at Wrigley Field in Chicago, ended after 22 innings as the Dodgers beat the Cubs 2-1. That game started the day prior on August the 17th. In 1986, some football news. Jim Kelly signed with the NFL's Buffalo Bills for $75 million over five seasons in 1986. In 1987, we said so long to one of the all-time great running backs, a physical freak in Earl Campbell, Houston Oiler great, retiring from the NFL on this day in 1987. And lastly, very recent, 2021, 4 years ago, Major League Baseball Angels pitcher Shohei Ohtani became the fastest player in team history to reach 40 home runs in a season, and also pitched eight innings in a 3-1 win against the Detroit Tigers. Limited birthdays to celebrate today, but some notable personalities here. And we start with a 1934 birthday for Major League Baseball notable playmaker Roberto Clemente. Passed away in 1972. Puerto Rican Baseball Hall of Fame outfielder, 15-time All-Star, World Series winner two times over with the Pirates, born in Carolina, Puerto Rico in 1934. 1968 birthday today for one of the better return men in NFL history. You remember the name Brian Mitchell, football running back, punt returner, kick returner, born in Leesville, Louisiana on this day in 1968. And today is a big birthday for Columbus, Ohio native who now calls Madison, Wisconsin home, has a very tough schedule ahead of his team this year. Luke Fickle, head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers, celebrating a birthday, born in Columbus, Ohio in 1973. And another, do you remember that dude? How could you forget Jeremy Shockey? It's his birthday today, 1980 birthday for Jeremy Shockey, American football tight end, born in Ada, Oklahoma. That's on this day in sports history. College football is here. Not just yet, but just about here. We got games this weekend and next week and every week all the way out until when is the national championship game? Mid-January at this point. The Big Ten has their way. Championship game will be in March, just before the start of March Madness. 24-28 team playoff pitched by the Big Ten over the weekend. Absolutely crazy stuff from the FBS. We'll dive into some more college football news coming up next on this Monday, August 18th edition of Overtime.
It's so convenient. Sports on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Just a word of friendly advice for this coming weekend for all folks out there set to sit on the couch over the weekend, watch some college football. Make your honey-do list day on Sunday. Saturday, We got just about wall-to-wall college football, 11 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and 6:30. That'll keep you on the couch from, 10:30 in the morning for pregame all the way out until 9:30, 10 o'clock at night when we see Stanford and Hawaii tussle from overseas. Now, let's dive right in to the news of the day in college football centered around the Alabama Crimson Tide. They're going to be without a key playmaker in tailback Jam Miller. Eighth-ranked Crimson Tide's top returning rusher suffered an upper body injury in a scrimmage on Saturday and is expected to miss the season opener at Florida State. Crimson Tide coach Kalen DeBoer said in a statement Sunday that Miller was hurt and had a medical procedure following the scrimmage at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Jam Miller suffered an upper body injury in Saturday's scrimmage, went in for a procedure on Saturday night. DeBoer said should recover fully with the timetable for his return yet to be determined. Miller, a senior from Tyler, Texas, hotbed of high school football success, led Bama tailbacks last year with 668 yards and 7 scores a year ago. Sophomore stepping in, Richard Young, 146 yards last year. Daniel Hill, just 61 yards last year. Figure to get the bulk of the carries against the Noles in the opener. That is a 2:30 Central start time coming up a couple of weeks away for the Crimson Tide. Well, one of football's all-time greats, one of college football's all-time greats, Cam Newton, will be celebrated soon by the Auburn Tiger football program. Former Tiger quarterback who won the Heisman Trophy in 2010 before leading the team to a national title that season. Retirement ceremony will take place this fall, October 11th, during Auburn's rivalry game against Georgia at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And Newton will join fellow Heisman winners Pat Sullivan, Bo Jackson, as well as record-setting wide receiver Terry Beasley as the only Auburn players to have their numbers retired. Short stint there for Cam Newton, but a historically great season, historically great football team for the Tigers. They get the job done that year, and Cam Newton, his jersey up in the rafters, retiring number 2 in Auburn, Alabama this October. Syracuse has finalized their quarterback situation. They've named Notre Dame transfer Steve Angeli as their starting quarterback, sources telling ESPN, and he'll debut for the Orange against number 24 Tennessee in the opener in Atlanta. Angeli, redshirt junior, narrowly beat out LSU transfer Ricky Collins, who played well during camp, according to ESPN.com. Angeli and the Orangemen are going to take on Tennessee, different shade of orange, coming up in Atlanta in the season opener, and Tennessee notably has a new quarterback. Nico Emialiava joined the UCLA Bruins in a very strange situation this offseason. And former App State Mountaineer starting quarterback senior Joey Aguilar will be the starting quarterback in Knoxville, transferred to UCLA from UCLA to Tennessee in April, a day after the former Vols quarterback Nico Emialiava joined the UCLA Bruins in what essentially was a college football quarterback trade. Aguilar had transferred from App State to UCLA during the winter portal and was in line to start for the Bruins until UCLA signed Emialiava. Now they flip-flop back, and Aguilar going to be the starter at Tennessee. That is official as of today. And let's take a look, a little preview here of the weekend ahead. Again, you don't have to leave your couch for long on Saturday. There is a little bit of a gap, and that gap time for all of you scoring at home should be about 2:15, 2:30 in the afternoon, just prior to probably the snooziest game of the weekend. That'll be Idaho State and UNLV from Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. But you're going to want to tune in for College Game Day, everything that goes with it, and pregame coverage for Iowa State and Kansas State, a.k.a. Farmageddon, between two really good programs. Both of these teams in the Big 12 are ranked to start the year. Cyclones number 22, K-State number 17, and the spread is out. And I'm not overly surprised here, and I might be a little bit biased, but I feel like we're not giving the Cyclones enough love. This is a neutral site matchup, comparable teams, and it is a 3-point number at ESPN Bet right now in favor of Kansas State. Over-under for that season opener from Aviva Stadium in Dublin for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic is 49.5 points. That's game one of the day, Iowa State, Kansas State from Dublin. Game two, Idaho State, UNLV, probably a snooze button game. You can probably take that early afternoon off or get some rest, some R&R, if you will, ahead of a 5:30 start time between Fresno State and Kansas. KU favored at home by nearly 2 touchdowns at ESPN Bet. Sam Houston and Western Kentucky. Bearcats, a relative newcomer still to the FBS level. Formidable program. They battle the toppers in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Western Kentucky is a 10-point favorite in that one, and Stanford and Hawaii. Stanford used to be so darn dependable, such a rock-solid program with great players within it, great alumni. They've fallen off quite a bit to the tune that they are an underdog in the opener against the Warriors in Honolulu. Stanford at Hawaii, 6:30 that night on CBS, and Hawaii is a 2.5-point favorite in that game. Next up at the FBS level next Thursday night, get you some spreads and a little looky-loo at what to come. A huge amount of games going on, but the two that you need to know about in our neck of the woods, Buffalo at Minnesota, 7 o'clock Fox Sports 1 next Thursday night. Gophers are a 15-point favorite at home, and Nebraska and Cincinnati, de facto home game, at least that's what we're hearing, down in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium, and Nebraska nearly a touchdown favorite. That number hanging on for now at 6.5. And if I had to guess, I would imagine we'll get a little bit of a bump up. That'll be a 7-point spread before too long. Nebraska, Cincinnati, that game 8 o'clock next Thursday night on ESPN. And we do have some semi-breaking news to share with you from the world of college football. Nothing crazy, I promise, but Iowa State, after taking on Kansas State coming up on Saturday, they're going to turn around and host USD in Ames next weekend. That'll be Saturday, August the 30th. So a couple weekends away, South Dakota at Iowa State. And we do have the first spread out for that game. 2:30 Fox, Saturday, August 30th. And Iowa State favored by just north of 2 touchdowns, 15.5 points, the early spread at ESPN Bet for USD's season opener in Ames against the Cyclones. That's the latest and greatest from the world of college football. The Big Ten wants to move, or at least is talking about moving, the college football playoff to 24 or 28 teams. How ludicrous is that? So much so that I was texting some friends, we're college football nerds and junkies. I said, you know what? I've had enough. If they move it again from 12 to 16, I'm not going to cry about a 16-team playoff. But if it's 24, 28 teams, how many Big Ten teams get in? How many SEC schools get in? Is there room for the little guys? Sure. But I've seen enough. Little guys, as in the group of six now, because they obliterated a Power 5 conference and tore it apart at the seams to find the candy that's inside. You got six group of conferences now. They just need their own playoff, if we're being honest. They're not going to win a national championship. I wish they would. I wish they had the teams and had the horses to go and win 3, 4, 5 consecutive games, but they need their own playoff at that level too, because this is out of control at that Power 4 level of college football. That's my two cents right now on a potential 24 to 28 team playoff pitched over the weekend by the Big Ten. That's hour number one. We'll take a break, come back, headlines and highlights. Latest from the NFL, Matthew Stafford's injury concern. It's real, people. We'll get you the latest there, the latest commentary around that situation, and what'll happen with the Rams. Are they going to roll with Stetson Bennett and Jimmy G? Could they go and get Kirk Cousins? Could they trade for somebody else that might be available, like a Malik Willis in Green Bay? We'll see what the Rams end up doing, but we will preview that season ahead out in Los Angeles in hour two. Major League Baseball chatter and the good, the bad, and the ugly before we're done on this Monday edition of Overtime. That's next right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.